I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Abigail Gumbiner, the daughter of the legendary civil rights rabbi Joseph Gumbiner. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. We are now on the home stretch of the year 5774, headed for 5775, which begins a week from Wednesday night with the holiday of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. This is always an exciting, energetic, and challenging time of year, a period when we Jews examine our lives in the past year and seek to improve in the year to come. The great beauty of the Jewish High Holy Day season is the wonderful opportunity it provides for each of us to start over. Whatever it is that we've done in the past year, whoever we've offended, however we have failed, we now have the chance to begin again, to remake our personal world. The Hebrew word tshuva means more than repentance. It means return to the best that is within us. In the course of a long year, even the most ethical have been known to act in ways that are less than stellar, to do things we're not proud of. In a basic human way, the High Holy Days asks us to remove the burden of guilt, that very Jewish of emotions, and restore the delicate balance we all need in our lives. By repairing our relations with others, we can reignite the divine spark within us and return to being the good people we wish to be. If we are fortunate and sincere in our tshuva, we can even rediscover the idealism we have hidden away so deeply under the weight of daily responsibility and emotional baggage. And we can emerge from this period of the year refreshed, replenished, ready to live better lives in the new 5775 year. What a gift. But first, of course, we must admit that we made a few mistakes. In this season of Eid Ratzon, this time of potential divine favor, it's also essential for us to look at our Jewish community. In order to make tshuva effective, we must honestly examine both our individual actions and the ways that we have worked collectively. In the past year, have we really done all that we could to improve our microcosm of this Jewish world? Or are we simply perpetuating the same mistakes annually? The Hebrew word for year, shana, comes from the same root word as the Hebrew word for change. The lesson is clear. Where we have not succeeded, we must seek new ways to do things. Where we are not meeting our goals and ideals, we must change. And change is often hard. We are used to doing what we have always done. Change means doing things the way we haven't done them this past year. It means stretching, reaching beyond our comfort levels in a quest to improve our lives and our world. In fact, in every area of our lives, Jewish and secular, this is the time to figure out what we are not doing well and what we need to do to improve. This serious, holy time of year gives each of us the chance to make 5775 a better year for us. And the time to start that process? Why, right now. Slichot, the service that begins the High Holy Days season, is coming up this Saturday night. The late night prayers begin the period of penitence and returns, our Yomim Noraim, the Jewish days of awe. There's a famous passage in the Bible that reads, "At midnight I rise to praise my God." And in that tradition, we begin the penitential season with prayer, study, and tshuva at that late hour this coming Saturday night. May this slichot and this entire season prove to be a time of return and renewal for each of us. We continue with our pre-Rosh Hashanah preview of High Holy Day music. Here's the beautiful and haunting Ki Kishimcha from the Rosh Hashanah morning service. we offer praise to you, God, who waits for us to return. That was Ki Kishimcha from the Rosh Hashanah morning service. Coming up about 10 days from now, Rosh Hashanah starts September 24th. The first morning is September 25th. You know, race relations in America have always been a challenging area. But in the 1920s and 1930s, they were off limits for rabbis to discuss publicly. Yet one courageous, pioneering Reform rabbi, Rabbi Joseph Kumbiner, decided he would take on the issue directly, even while serving congregations in places like Selma, Alabama. Kumbiner later marched with Martin Luther King Jr. Find out what happened in between, in places like Reno, Nevada and Tucson, Arizona, when we return in a few moments, right here on Too Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org.
A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 15th anniversary with a special family class and in new locations. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbis Sam Kohan and Rabbi Batsheva Appel lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up, or go to our website, templeemmanueltucson.org. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. It's free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But please, pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. Taste of Judaism has both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, East Tucson, and Green Valley, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There's no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 520-327-4501 for more information and to register today for Taste of Judaism.
We are delighted to welcome to Jewish our guest this morning. She's Abigail Gumbiner. She is the daughter of one of the really remarkable rabbis, unsung heroes on the Jewish side of the civil rights movement in America. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Thank you, Rabbi. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Abigail, tell me a little bit, your father served a variety of congregations. He was a colorful figure by all accounts, including my own Temple Emmanuel in Tucson, Arizona, which wasn't quite ready for him in some ways. Tell us a little bit about what motivated him to be so active in working for civil rights in America.
Well, he was the kind of rabbi that was just steeped in prophetic Judaism and was passionate about trying to participate in repairing the world. Whenever he encountered social injustice, he just couldn't leave it alone. And he took huge professional and physical risks throughout his career. And in Tucson, it really did come to a head in several different ways. He greatly angered the more socially conservative members of the community because of the steps that he was taking with other brave individuals in Tucson in the early 1940s.
You know, a lot of us are familiar with the photograph of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel walking with Martin Luther King in Selma. But your dad not only did that, but he also was active way back to when the Scottsboro Boys were on trial. He really began his rabbinate in the South. Talk a little bit about some of his, you know, early beginnings in this.
Well, his pulpit right out of rabbinical school and college started in 1931 and went till 39 in Selma, Alabama. It was Congregation Mishkan Israel. And he became very familiar with sort of the culture of the South. He liked some of the cultural aspects of the South and continued to for the rest of his life, but he could not make his peace with the huge social, racial injustice that he encountered all around himself. So during the time that he was rabbi there, the famous Scottsboro trial took place. There were 9 Negro youth teenagers who were accused of rape. It was a very famous trial. It went on for years. Some of them were incarcerated. Finally, you know, decades later, they were forgiven for having mistakenly been accused of this crime. He spoke out about it on the pulpit in Selma then when the trial was going on. And you can imagine it infuriates who just didn't want their rabbi to be making noises about this, you know, very controversial, embarrassing even situation in their community.
You know, I think you said there was a special board of the congregation that insisted that Rabbi Gumbiner stick to Judaism. Where does Judaism mix with race relations? Which is undoubtedly also part of the reality of being Jewish in the South in that era. We will talk much more with Abigail Gumbiner about her father, Rabbi Joseph Gumbiner, and some of her own work when we come back this morning here on Two Jewish.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke International, new sponsors here on Two Jewish. What is Freedom Smoke International?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. Freedom Smoke USA is an electronic cigarette company based right here out of Tucson. We were the first store in the United States, the first store to have all FDA-approved products. It's a healthier alternative to cigarette smoking.
No smoke, no tobacco, and doctors refer people to you.
That's correct. My doctor actually just gave me a glowing report from other patients he's had that I've been able to find this as a healthier alternative to smoking.
Cardiologists, pulmonologists, even dentists, huh?
That's correct. It does help with all that.
How many flavors can people get of this?
We have over 700 flavors available.
Where are the locations and how do people get connected?
Our first location is at River and Orange Grove. We opened one at Broadway and Swan, and we currently just had our grand opening at 12th and Valencia.
And we do have a store in Southern Michigan also.
And what phone number can people call?
You can call the toll-free number at 1-800-705-7013. That's freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thank you, and we'll talk some more next week. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, 2JewishRadio.com, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. My friends, Rabbi Joseph Telushkin, our guest last Sunday here on Two Jewish, will be speaking at the Jewish Community Center in Tucson, Arizona on Monday night, September 15th. You can come to hear him by calling 520-299-3000 to the J or going to their website, tucsonjcc.org. He's outstanding in person, too. That's 299-3000 to hear Rabbi Joseph Telushkin live. Remember, Rosh Hashanah begins September 24th this year, now 10 days away. It's time to make arrangements to attend services. My own Temple Emmanuel offers them to everyone at no charge. Be our guest. But you do have to pre-register by calling 327-4501, that's 520-327-4501, to make arrangements to attend the High Holy Days at Temple Emmanuel. We welcome our Mivinah in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So we're in the midst of the month of Elul, just a little less than 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah now. In Ashkenazic tradition, the Saturday night before Rosh Hashanah is Slichot, and people get up and do prayers very late at night. But in Sephardic and Mizrahi tradition, there are Slichot prayers, special penitential prayers, prayers of return and repentance, very early every morning, every day for the month.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how that worked in sort of your hometown of Beit She'an and elsewhere in Israel.
Yeah, actually, my grandfather used to live, you know, in a apartment that really like shared the wall with a synagogue. So my memories and my brother and sister memories being kids was the 40 days of Slichot between, you know, Rosh Chodesh of Elul to Yom Kippur, that we will spend some of the nights, and the boys more than the girls will spend the nights with at Saba and Safta's house.
Grandma and we'll, grandpa's house, right?
Yeah, thank you. And we'll, you know, we'll enjoy. Then it was to enjoy getting up early with grandfather and going to Slichot, less for praying, more for having this tea
special.
And mint and special, you know, things that my grandmother and other women in the neighborhood will bake and will fry like sphinge and all kind of things that they will serve like early, like 5 a.m. They will have all kind, all these goodies.
Because they would get up, so the chod prayers are done before dawn, so it can be from midnight until 4 and 5 in the morning, very early.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But so usually they won't stay all night, but they will, you know, get up early,
get up
before sunrise.
4 o'clock or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, something yeah, like that. They will join my like grandfather and for prayers and will enjoy. It was a very special, and the weather, it's so unique. You know, it's beautiful weather in Israel, and especially in our you know, region,
which can
Northeast.
Otherwise be a little hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's yeah. So I think it will always. I don't think I feel it will always be a magical period of time for all of us. Even it was a while ago that I went to Slichot at 4 a.m.
It's still but available.
I will hear, you know, I will hear the birds. I will remember this, the unique sounds of this time at the day and in the year.
Very beautiful and special memory. And leading up to Rosh Hashanah, so that, and you're right, you know, even after up until Yom Kippur, the special penitential prayers as we return. In a way, it's also a return to those memories and those beautiful experiences as we get ready for the Yamim Noraim, the high holy days. We will talk about those when we come back next week.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about the Middle East, the major changes going on kind of both above and below the surface, and the tragic wars, which are seeing literally hundreds of thousands of civilians killed, sometimes with great brutality, in Syria, in Iraq, all of the disturbances going on. There does seem to be a kind of reaction against the revolutionary Islamist element that's been sort of exploding in the Islamic world from some of the Arab countries now. Can we explore that a little bit?
I think you're absolutely right about Arab states starting to be alarmed by non-state entities, movements like Hamas or ISIS that cause violence and bloodshed and also challenge governments which are essentially weak to non-existent. And one thing that's important to understand about the region is, with the exception of the Saudi royal family that is propped up by the U.S. government, regardless of what party's in the White House or whatever, but has been consistently propped up by us for more than 60 years and has caused endless enmity throughout the Islamic world for Americans. Many of the other states are very weak and are not perceived as being legitimate and engage in practices of governance that we would consider questionable at best, or the practices of failed or failing states at worst. This is not to suggest that all the states in the region are failed states, but let's look at the state that has, from our point of view, the best governance, which is Israel. It's the closest thing there is to a multi-party, truly multi-ethnic, functioning democracy that has basic respect for human rights, the
freedom
rule of law.
Freedom of the press, rule of law.
Right. Basic freedoms are generally respected, although some would argue they're not equally respected for all inhabitants of the state of Israel. And, you know, there's a question of pre-1967 Israel versus post-1967 Israel. But those are sub-questions. Generally speaking, Israel is a model of good governance and rule of law and pluralistic democracy in that region. But it's relative. And by that I mean, you know, probably in Israel, like in every other country, there's some degree of corruption and sometimes bad decisions are made.
For sure.
Sometimes the government doesn't speak with one voice. I mean, that can even be true here in state governments or in the federal government. So certainly it can be true of lots of successful states. Israel has a particular problem in that its political system, which I am, as you know, usually loath to talk about, derives from pre-state days in the Zionist movement, when there were all these different groups that were fighting to create a state, but they all had different visions of a state, and they've never gotten together and harmonized that vision.
Into so, a constitution, for example.
Right. So there's no consensus on the kind of state that Israel wants to build. There is a consensus unwritten on what kind of governance they would like to have, and it's a better vision than what they actually do have. So they have the best of a bad lot. But the other countries, which are another kettle of fish, we should discuss next week.
We will. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk then.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Sadie and Fanny are having their usual chat when Sadie suddenly asks, "I'm very embarrassed to be asking you this, Fanny, but you're my best friend, and I know you'll keep this to yourself. It's very personal." "Of course I will, Sadie," says Fanny. "I know when to keep quiet, so what do you want to ask me?" "Well," says Sadie, "how do you go about starting an affair?" And she blushes. "You've asked the right person, Sadie. I've had experience, you know," says Fanny. "I always start my affairs with Hava Nagila." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, a special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This coming week, we celebrate the final Shabbat of the year, which means that our Torah portion is one of the great sections of the whole year, Nitzavim. You stand here today, all of you, the oldest, the youngest, from the wealthiest to the poorest, the most famous to the humblest, leaders of your community and the strangers just visiting with you. You are all part of the covenant with the Lord your God. You and every other generation to come who will be descended from you. This great brit, this covenant, affirms that you will be God's people and God will be your Lord. This confirms that we are part of a profound and eternal tradition, a connection to our ancestors that will be carried forward to our descendants. Each of us, all of us, are part of this remarkable compact. It's an extraordinarily democratic and egalitarian agreement with God, a brit that's shared with everyone, regardless of gender or age. Children and women stand with men here, not always the case at the time of the Torah, or even today. So it's a very special covenant, but what's the content of the mitzvah that we are now to observe? At the climax of Nitzavim, we are told, "Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher nachim etzavcha hayom lo niflet hi mimcha." Look, this mitzvah that I command you today is not too awesome for you, and it's not beyond your reach. It's not in the heavens that you should say, "Who among us can go up to the heavens and take it for us and teach it to us that we may do it?" It's not across the sea that you should say, "Who among us can cross over the sea and bring it back to us so that we may do it?" No, it's very close to you, already in your mouth and in your heart to do it. Rabbi Lawrence Kushner says, "The Torah is not somewhere else. It's already in us. We're made of it. Torah is already coded into our protoplasm, our DNA. That's why it feels so good to live by the Torah, the way of all being. We're just doing what we've been designed for from the very beginning." Perhaps the mitzvah that Nitzavim speaks about is no more than becoming aware of the presence of Torah in our midst, or more precisely, of the presence of God in the here and now. In this season, we prepare for our tshuva, our return in repentance. But if God is here right now, then tshuva is a way of becoming aware that Torah is in our mouths and hearts. This may truly be the mother of all mitzvot, of all commandments. For all the other commandments are just human reflections of this one mitzvah, the awareness of God's presence. And tshuva then means God simply saying, "Return to me," again, become aware of me always being in your life. A great thing to remember as we approach Rosh Hashanah, and always. Fighting for civil rights for African Americans wasn't something many rabbis did in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, but Reform Rabbi Joseph Gumbiner, a pioneering crusader for equal rights, was one of the very few, and he spoke up in communities that he served, from Selma, Alabama, to Reno, Nevada, to Tucson, Arizona, to California. Hear his remarkable story from his daughter, Abigail Gumbiner, when we come back in just a few moments here on Too Jewish.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114. We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Comedians past and surviving took center stage last week in the news. Joan Rivers, the Jewish comedian who was a pioneer of female stand-up comedy, had her career launched and mentored for years by Johnny Carson before falling out with him over hosting a competing show, and had a long and legendary career in comedy, TV, books, the Broadway stage, Las Vegas, and movies. Joan Rivers died last week of surgical complications. She was 81 years old. Her funeral was a star-studded affair she would certainly have enjoyed at her own synagogue, Temple Emmanuel, on the Upper East Side of New York. Eulogies were delivered by her daughter Melissa and Howard Stern, the shock jock, among many others. Born Joan Alexandra Malinsky in Brooklyn, Joan Rivers graduated Phi Beta Kappa from Barnard College, held various jobs before entering show business. In fact, on her way up, she was everything including a Rockefeller Center tour guide. Joan Rivers' famous "Can We Talk" line was a trademark in comedy. She appeared as a guest and guest host on The Tonight Show and many other shows, hosted her own talk shows late at night and during the day, including one nominated for an Emmy, wrote 12 memoirs and humor books, and recorded many comedy albums. Joan Rivers started on TV on Candid Camera as a gag writer and as the bait to lure people into ridiculous televised situations. And for more than 20 years, Johnny Carson helped nurture her comedy and TV career until the well-publicized end of their friendship, when Rivers, his frequent guest host, took a job hosting a competing talk show without telling him first. They never made up or spoke again. Joan Rivers was famous for her jokes about her frequent plastic surgery and modest physical attributes.
With age comes wisdom.
Yes.
You don't need big boobs to be feminine. Look at Liberace.
Don't you think men really like intelligence more when it comes right down to it?
Ah, please. Are we going to go back to that? Are you kidding?
Sure. I mean, it's a brain, you know, a caring person.
No man has ever put his hand up a woman's dress looking for a library card.
Joan Rivers and her daughter Melissa Rivers shared a close mother-daughter relationship. That bond was visible last week when Melissa delivered a hilarious yet moving eulogy at her mother's funeral. Joan Rivers recently stayed in her daughter's Los Angeles home to tape a show called Fashion Police. As a result, Melissa shared some of the issues her mom had while she stayed with her, in particular when it came to Joan taking care of her 13-year-old grandson, Cooper. Melissa's concerns included, "It's not okay that you let him have chips and ice cream for dinner," she said. "It's not okay that you let him skip school to go to the movies. And it's really not okay that the movie was The Last Tango in Paris." And the time Joan Rivers took her grandson Cooper and his friends to a gentleman's club? I accepted your rationale that it was an educational experience for the boys, and you're right. He is now the most popular kid in middle school, but I'd prefer he not learn biology from those gentlemen and their ladies, Bambi, Trixie, and Kitten. Despite Joan's unique lifestyle, Melissa couldn't deny her deep love for her mom. I loved having you live with me. I was grateful for every minute Cooper and I had with you, she said at the funeral. You are an inspiration, and you are also 30 days late with the rent. Joan Rivers was a true pioneer of comedy, a very funny and courageous woman. She will be missed, and I suppose now we'll find out if her old line has come true. I've had so much plastic surgery, when I die, they'll donate my body to Tupperware.
Yeah, well, I was a manufacturer. I was an owner.
What kind of a factory did you have?
I had I used to make the Star of David, the Jewish stars. I was one of the first makers.
Oh,
of
yes,
that.
The little soon thing you wear.
As said, yeah, as soon as religion came in, I was one of the first in that.
And,
I figured this is a good thing.
Yes, and how did you make them? Did you have tools?
Well, we didn't have lathes. I employed 6 men. See, each with a point. And they used to run together in the middle of the factory. And in their great speeds, they would fuse the thing. And they would
thus
make,
making a star.
Yes, we would make 2 a day because of the many accidents. We have 6 men running at high speed with points. You know.
Veteran funny man Mel Brooks sank his hand and footprints into the cement outside Hollywood's famed Chinese theater yesterday. And he couldn't help adding a little extra detail. The comic director's left hand appeared to have miraculously grown a 6th finger for the ceremony, ensuring his handprints will stand out from those of generations of Tinseltown greats. He said he left the unique 6-fingered mark just in case somebody from Des Moines, Iowa says, Harry, look, Mel Brooks has 6 fingers on his left hand. About time, huh? His son, author Max Brooks, said when he presented his dad to fans and media. Comedians never get their fair share of recognition in Hollywood. How often does a comedy get Best Movie of the Year? The 88-year-old Mel Brooks then stepped forward to press his hands and feet into the cement in the courtyard of the Chinese theater, joking, I'm almost honored to be part of it. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for being here and being part of this wonderful charade. I really love it, Mel Brooks added. Ever since I was a kid in Brooklyn in 1952, and I came out here immediately to the Chinese theater and saw all these stars and their hands and feet in the cement. I was so impressed that when I did Blazing Saddles, I ended the film with Harvey Korman dying, being shot here. And he looks at Douglas Fairbanks' prints and he says, how could he do such stunts with such small feet? And then he dies. Mel Brooks was born Melvin Kaminsky in Brooklyn's Jewish Williamsburg neighborhood in 1926. He went on to become one of the most celebrated comedy directors of all. His handprints were taken last week, marking the 40th anniversary of his parody horror film, Young Frankenstein. His other famous movies include The Producers, The 12 Chairs, High Anxiety, The History of the World, and Spaceballs, each spoofing a different genre of filmmaking. Each hilarious. In other news, we found out the answer last week to the question, are Jews a race? Well, no. But Ashkenazic Jews are essentially a large family of cousins. A model based on the genetic sequencing of 128 Ashkenazi Jews concludes that today's Ashkenazim descend from the fusion of European and Middle Eastern Jews during the medieval era, between 600 and 800 years ago. More specifically, Ashkenazic Jews are all at least 30th cousins. The math indicates that today's sprawling community of Ashkenazic Jews, more than 10 million around the world, derive from just 350 people or so. That previously postulated population bottleneck, a drastic reduction in population size caused by persecution or famine or disease, occurred between 25 and 32 generations ago. The study was published last week in the journal Nature Communications by a team headed by Columbia University's Shai Carmon. This research also showed that the group of 350 people was made up of Jews of Middle Eastern and European origin, disproving the much-debated theory that Jews descend from the Khazars, a Turkish people who lived in the Caucasus region between the 7th and 10th centuries. A number of genetic characteristics are associated with Ashkenazic groups as opposed to other Jewish populations. or other contemporary Middle Eastern or European peoples. Ashkenazim are associated with no less than 19 genetic disorders. Because of this, according to the Center for Jewish Genetics, many are fatal and arise from single gene mutations. This list includes forms of breast and ovarian cancer, Tay-Sachs disease, and Gaucher's disease. Sephardic Jews also have some illnesses of their own, including the genetic disorder Wolman's disease and an allergy to fava beans. The discovery has significance for doctors and Jewish patients. Just last week, a different study revealed that all Ashkenazic women, even those without any family history of cancer, may carry the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genetic mutations linked to breast and ovarian cancer. The more genetic information available regarding Ashkenazic Jews, the fewer genome sequences doctors need to test and analyze when looking for potential problems or mutations. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Her name is Abigail Gumbiner. She is a photographer, but in this case, she is also the best authority on her father, Rabbi Joseph Gumbiner, a pioneering civil rights rabbi in America when that was neither popular nor necessarily safe. Welcome back. Your dad started out his rabbinate. First of all, it was common in those days for kids to come right out of high school, go into Hebrew Union College for undergraduate, which is usually shared with the University of Cincinnati, and the rabbinate. So they were really boy rabbis by the time they got done. In the interest of full disclosure, my grandfather was on the faculty at Hebrew Union College. He probably started there while your dad was in the process of studying for ordination. He came out really, it's nice to hear. No, that's great. He came out, he was 25 years old, and here he was in his first pulpit in Selma, Alabama. And that was not his background, of course. He then went on, after serving there, he founded a Hillel at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, became the rabbi there. And was it that Alabama got to be too hot for him and he decided to move west, or was it that your mom didn't want him to be a rabbi?
No, it was because of my mother, Sylvia Tierstein. They were crazy in love with one another, and she only agreed that she would marry him if he stopped being a rabbi. And he agreed to it. So he left Selma in 1939, and the two of them moved to Reno, Nevada, got married, and in fact, I was born there a few years later. So trying really hard not to be a rabbi, they opened a store that dealt with the things that Dad particularly loved. It was a bookstore. It may have been the first bookstore ever opened in Reno, for all I know. And pipes and tobacco. And they established the first lending library there. And my mother came from a social work background, and they did get very involved in politics in Reno during those few less than 3 years that they lived there. The prostitution was running rampant, and there was no health facility, no health care offered to the working women, and they joined some committees to try to organize that and sort of clean up the situation, not morally, but as far as health was concerned.
So he really couldn't resist getting involved in important political issues wherever he was, which seems to me to be one of the definitions of a rabbi. I understand that. That's kind of the idea. I remember a professor of mine in Hebrew in college telling me everybody wants to make the people that come into the synagogue comfortable. He said, I thought the job of the rabbi was to make the uncomfortable people feel comfortable and the comfortable people feel uncomfortable.
Yes, yes. Agreed. But not all rabbis are like that. You know that.
That's true.
It can be controversial at times. While they were in Reno, the liberal Jews who were there, who had no congregation of their own, discovered him. And they really pressured him into, in the back of the bookstore, keeping him a question basic Judaism and beginning to carry on various rabbinical needs that they had to be fulfilled, the rites. And I guess at some point my mother just gave up and gave in, because there were enough people in Reno there who wanted to establish a Reformed liberal congregation. And so it happened. The first Reformed temple in Nevada was established with him while he was there. It was called Temple Bethor. And it's now the Temple Sinai in Reno.
I've been there. I've officiated a weekend there. It's still there and still the most important synagogue in that part of Nevada. Your dad was only there a few years, and then he was called to Tucson, Arizona, my town these days, for the last 16 years. And he served Temple Emmanuel. It was the only Reformed congregation in the historic Stone Avenue Temple downtown, first temple in the Arizona Territory before it was a state, founded in 1910. Your dad was a little too progressive for Tucson in those days, wasn't he?
Yes, he definitely was. I have to tell you that my parents adored Tucson. They loved it. They loved the desert. They had many, many friends that they made there that remained as lifelong friends. We traveled back there numerous times. I can't even count how many times, just to visit friends and to enjoy Tucson. They would have been happy to have stayed there for the rest of their lives. They loved being close to Mexico, too, going way into Mexico and exploring it back in those days, in the 40s and 50s. He was, at the same time that he was working at Temple Emmanuel, Temple Emmanuel,
right.
He became the Hillel director at the University of Arizona. They didn't have a Hillel Foundation yet, but he was asked by B'nai B'rith to establish it, and he did, and he loved working with the students also at the same time as being the rabbi at Emmanuel.
He got the land that the current Hillel Foundation is on now at the University of Arizona, and really was a founding rabbi, the Hillel here.
Yeah.
He went on to get his degree in philosophy from the U of A, taught on campus, and then he and Rabbi Brager, the conservative rabbi, worked to bring Holocaust survivors to the Tucson Zionist district. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I mean, there was a lot of anti-Zionist sentiment, well, throughout our country. And Dad early on was not a Zionist, but he really changed his mind when they began to get news of the concentration camps and the Holocaust. And he and Rabbi Brager were very close friends. And the two of them together formed this it was called the district, the Zionist district in Tucson. And they went around visiting all of their various congregants, talking them into helping with this whole thing and helping to raise money to develop a homeland for the survivors of the Holocaust. And he and Brager remained friends for the rest of their lives, too. I knew his daughter for years. In 1943, Dad joined with another group of community members to do something about the interracial tensions that were occurring in Tucson. And he explained it as because of Fort Huachuca during World War II, there were many, many African-American soldiers who would come into Tucson hoping to go and relax at the USO Club, and they weren't even allowed into it. And this really bothered Dad and a lot of other people. So a committee was formed, and a newspaper article appeared in the Star talking about this committee. It was called the Tucson Interracial Council, and it was organized to allay some of the tensions and build good relationships among all of the races and religions in Tucson.
The challenge was the more conservative members of Temple Emmanuel, or in fact, really, the pressure on members of Temple from people who were no longer members, not even Jewish anymore, that Rabbi Gumbiner was a little too controversial, he wasn't good for the Jews in Tucson, and so on. Can you talk about the results of that pressure?
Yeah, I think some of the people, especially some of the more financially affluent ones, were embarrassed by their rabbi, so publicly being involved in interracial situations in Tucson. So anyhow, there were, a lot of the big department stores were owned by Jews and were very successful. And at the same time that this was going on, the little frog was bursting at the seams. In fact, it had, I believe, 28 official family members when Dad arrived there. And before Dad left, Temple Emmanuel had over 200 family memberships. So there was it was a little one-room building.
Yeah, it still is. It's a beautifully restored museum, but it's not big.
Right. And so they, of course, always had to rent places to have any big holiday celebrations and stuff. So it was very necessary that a building campaign start so they could find land and build a building. So this was continuing successfully, and the building campaign was continuing successfully. And there was an annual congregational meeting in 1946. And a major effort was launched by the socially conservative members to refuse to renew my dad's employment contract. This was a big deal. I mean, his supporters, whom there were many, got out the vote. And at a late night meeting, which he could not be present at, Dad was voted back in and won by a huge 2-1 margin, which was really terrific. And so he continued in his job as the head of the congregation. So what happened was the big givers to the building campaign for the very, very greatly needed new building pulled the plug on the fundraising. And they really told the board and my father that if he didn't get out of town, they were pulling all of their money out of that project. And they would either go to, I guess, Ancho Israel was established by then, or started a whole congregation. And it put my father in a very uncomfortable position, because he'd have to choose between continuing the fight there, and who knows what would happen with the building campaign, or leave peacefully and go on to other jobs, which is what he chose to do. And he left in 1949.
And from there, really quite a remarkable career.
1947,
okay. Because Rabbi Bilgrey came in, they built the building where it currently is on Country Club Road. I want to thank Abigail Gumbiner for great memories of her father, Rabbi Joseph Gumbiner, and his remarkable civil rights career, and the man who had the courage of his convictions. Thank you so much, Abigail.
Thank you, Rabbi. It was a pleasure.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 15th anniversary with a special family class and in new locations. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbis Sam Kohan and Rabbi Batsheva Appel lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up, or go to our website, templeemmanueltucson.org. The class includes delicious taste of traditional Jewish foods. It's free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But please, pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501.
Taste of Judaism has both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, East Tucson, and Green Valley, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There's no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 520-327-4501 for more information and to register today for Taste of Judaism.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be John Ben Asher, the head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy, discussing the Jewish day school movement and just what day schools are today and will be in the future. Our playout this morning comes from our High Holy Day preview of music for the coming Jewish High Holy Days, the Yamim Noraim, now just a week and a half away, starting September 24th. Actually, this isn't exactly a High Holy Day preview, but a takeoff song instead by Michelle Citrin called I Gotta Love You, Rosh Hashanah. My friends, may you and your family have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Rosh Hashanah here. Leave a message.
Hey, RH. It's me. If you're there, pick up. I was just looking at the Hebrew calendar, and I see you coming up. And I can't wait to celebrate. You are the head of the new year. I'm so glad you're coming near. Is that a shofar that I hear being blown? I want you to inscribe me in your book of life. You're the honey to my hive. 'Cause I gotta love you, Rosh Hashanah. I can't wait for 5768. You're my favorite holiday. I like to celebrate. I got an apple to dip and Manischewitz to sip on. 'Cause I gotta love you, Rosh Hashanah. Kippur leaves me feeling empty inside. Passover reminds me of the tears that we cried.